You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the April 2023 issue of Vanity Fair magazine, which features Gisele Bündchen on the cover. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's the editor's letter from Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief, with photograph by Mark Seliger. If you didn't know spring was here, you would sense it from the energy of the stars in the pages of this issue. First, there's Gisele, embarking on a new chapter, living an enviably healthy life in Costa Rica with her children and exercising healing powers on wounded birds. For our cover story, Michelle Ruiz spends some intimate time at home with the supermodel and her family, during which they ride horses, drink smoothies, and talk jiu-jitsu and other strategies for self-care. Gisele's beachy vibes reign supreme in Lachlan Bailey's sun-drenched photographs, a taste of warmth and light to come. And there's our portfolio of this season's stellar Broadway talent, Jessica Chastain, Wendell Pierce, Leah Michelle, Daniel Radcliffe, and many more great actors reveling in a neon-saturated Times Square simulacrum. It's delightful to page through this surfeit of performers and shows. After on-again, off-again COVID deprivation, Broadway really is back, and it feels better than ever. A few years ago, we published a story by Maggie Bullock about the changing fortunes at J. Crew, the retailer that in the 1980s and 90s defined faded East Coast preppy chic, and whose catalogs, in their peak era, perfected the image of understated privilege. I remember vividly those pages and pages of fresh-faced, beautiful people gazing serenely into the middle distance, possibly from a boat, in sensible yet sexy swimsuits, or chilling out in nautical stripes and madras shorts on the edge of a dock or at a clam bake. To wear J. Crew was to claim the mantle of American ease, channeled through a cardigan. My go-to was navy blue. Maggie has since written an entire book about the company, and we're so pleased to be excerpting a chapter in this issue about the co-founder, Emily Senatter, a proto-girl boss who quietly created the original J. Crew look and that catalog aesthetic, turning it into a cultural and retail juggernaut. As the company embarks on its fourth, or maybe fifth incarnation, depending on how you count, with Olympia Gallo, the new head of women's design, it's fascinating to dive back into its origins as a modest mail-order business with no particular ambitions to lay claim to the world formerly colonized by Ralph Lauren. Maggie traces Emily's rise, her elevation of the catalog into magazine art, and her foray to Hollywood, where stars like Bruce Willis and Chris O'Donnell offered helpful business advice, make boxers. She paints a behind-the-scenes portrait of a brand that embraced effortlessness in its look, but was in fact a product of relentless perfectionism, down to the last button. Now for some of the contributors to this issue. Lachlan Bailey, Wild at Heart. Giselle really has no equal, says photographer Bailey. The Melbourne, Australia native who shot the supermodel seaside in Florida on a sun-drenched day this winter says she knows photography and light better than most. This is a rare treat these days. Delia Kai, it's a Barbie world. There is something so deliciously postmodern about the world's most popular doll appropriating Instagram mannerisms and content creator speak, says Vanity Fair staff writer Kai. Let's be real, trends come and go, but Barbie's influence very well might be forever. Michelle Ruiz, Wild at Heart. One commercial flight, one puddle jumper, and a car ride later, Ruiz, a journalist working on a novel inspired by the royal family saga, met Giselle Bündchen at her home in Costa Rica. On horseback and accompanied by Bündchen's daughter Vivi, the two caught the last glimmers of sunset. Kathleen Hale, Echoes in the Dark. Profiling Brian Enton was meta, says Hale, the author of Slender Man. I was a crime reporter following a crime reporter in a context where true crime obsession played a huge role. Many gravitate toward crime stories. What separates us are the lengths we'll go to become involved. Maggie Bullock, The Kingdom of Prep. Bullock's book, The Kingdom of Prep, the inside story of the rise and near fall of J. Crew, all started with a 2019 Vanity Fair feature, says the editor and co-founder of the newsletter The Spread. That early reporting opened my eyes to a richer story about a brand that occupies a very specific place in the American psyche. Charlotte Klein, Chat Person. Staff writer Klein has spent the past 2 years covering the intersection of media, politics, and tech. Kara Swisher is in many ways where all of these beats converge, she says. At 60, she continues to forge her own path, and the energy of this piece gives a sense of what it was like reporting it. Alton Mason Walks the Walk by Britt Hinnemuth, with photographs by Nick Riley Bentham of the subject wearing high fashion looks. As a student of the catwalk, Alton Mason looked to Naomi Campbell. I wasn't really studying the guys, to be honest with you. I was studying the women, because women carry this power that is unmatched. His own walk became this equilibrium of masculinity and femininity. It served him well. Since his New York Fashion Week debut in 2016, the 5-time consecutive Model of the Year has walked 143 runways and starred in 86 campaigns. After earning the admiration of Virgil Abloh and Karl Lagerfeld, who had, shockingly, never put a black man on a Chanel runway before, Mason made his Hollywood debut, dazzling as Little Richard in Baz Luhrmann's Oscar-nominated Elvis. But for a career that has historically felt all too finite, you're missing birthdays, funerals, and sacrificing so much, says Mason. I have seen a lot of people lose themselves. He's working on finding himself instead. Mason was born in Nebraska, but he and his family lived in 11 countries over 13 years. His dad was a pro basketball player. I never had a best friend because we always moved. When I'm spending time with someone, I cherish the present differently. Fellow supermodel Iman Hammam went to school across from Mason in Amsterdam. He was dating one of her classmates. The world is so small. After high school, during which the family had settled in Phoenix, Mason moved to L.A. for the American Musical and Dramatic Academy, College of Performing Arts. Family lore, he says, is that I could dance before I could walk. An internship with choreographer Laurianne Gibson turned into a prestigious first gig, dancing behind Diddy, Pharrell, and Lil' Kim at the BET Awards. I learned social intelligence, big boss energy. I had to get coffee, play the music, and dance. It sharpened every single sense. After his New York Fashion Week debut, Gucci flew him to Rome to try on 1,000 outfits for then-creative director Alessandro Michele. A day later, I was put under exclusive contract. That's how everything started. At his first Louis Vuitton show, Abloh asked him to do a solo improv during the finale. Minutes later, Mason was doing backflips down the runway, and the next thing I knew, they sent me to Nice for 3D body scans. Life-size reproductions of his flip, he says, were in every Louis Vuitton store worldwide. Campbell, he says, sculpted what modeling is. Following Abloh's death at Vuitton's tribute show, the tables turned. She said, "I want to walk how you did. Teach me how to walk like a man." So I showed her how to do my little pimp walk, my little gangster walk, and she went on the runway and did it. To me, she's like the Michael to my Kobe. She is the goat, man. He met Luhrmann after an awards show in Australia. The director approached his mom and asked, "Can your son sing?" "He can, and his great-great-great-aunt is Mahalia Jackson, a major gospel influence on Presley. The next day, I met Baz at a theater and Little Richard is playing. I went in the bathroom and cried after he offered me the part. Up next, audiences can look forward to new music and more on-screen roles, but he's careful not to share too much. Still, dreams don't die. You just dream more." best for last, Spring's cookbooks skew sweet with a side of personal history by Laura Regensdorf. More Than Cake, celebrated for her fine dining pastry work and fundraiser bake sales, Natasha Pickowitz brings a community spirit to this soulfully precise book from Artisan, both festive, black sesame layer cake, and savory, kabocha gelette. Mayumu, Abi Balingit's colorful debut via Harvest, has a coming-of-age arc with classic Filipino dishes filtered through a no-rules multicultural lens. Pichi-pichi, like cassava snowballs, uses Mexican chamoy sauce. Chewy rice cakes sneak in Oreos. Sweet Enough, a bid for deliciously unkempt desserts. Allison Roman's latest with Clarkson Potter treats salty as a compliment. Chocolate pudding, lemon shortbread. She dotes on pies, but also offers a primer on judiciously seasoned fruit salad. Love is a Pink Cake. Claire Ptak, the Chez Panisse alum who runs London's Violet Cakes, divides this sumptuous book, published by W.W. Norton, into two. California is produce forward, while Harry and Meghan's wedding cake is the talk of England. Now here's what's trending. Secret Garden. To make the most of vernal pleasures, don your midi skirts and wellies, drape yourself in delicate woven accessories, and take a romp, literal or otherwise, in the Scottish Highlands. In the photo, Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip, photographed at Balmoral in September 1972 in honor of their 25th wedding anniversary. And now the items, also photographed here, Goddess of the Heath, Complete Works, Earrings, Loewe Parka, Brent Neal Necklace, Gucci Jacket, Dior Shorts and Bra, Barber and Chloe Hat, Bodhi Pants, Bottega Veneta Bag, Omega Watch, Lazarus Duvas Rose, 1845 Body Oil Mist, Clef de Peau Beauté Crème Rouge Matte Lip Color, and 115 Coeur d'Alene, Prada Coat, Laura Piana Skirt, Le Chameau Boots, and SS Daily Sweater. Now this from Daisy Shaw Ellis, Circle Round, with photograph by Jacques Brun, Louis Vuitton High Jewelry, Fantasy Necklaces in White Gold, Yellow Gold, and Diamonds. From Boudica to Joan of Arc, mythic memory favors bold and armored women. Thus, Francesca Amfitrioff, artistic director of watches and jewelry at Louis Vuitton, took inspiration from the arrow in this standout necklace from her fourth high jewelry collection, the 125-item juggernaut she's dubbed Spirit. Evoking the crisp lines of the Chrysler Building and the gleam of a slithering serpent, the piece blends antiquity and modernity in two loops of time, with its clockwise chevrons alternating yellow gold and diamond-studded platinum. Fly forward, fast and true. New York doll, a chameleonic presence on the runway and stage. And in this summer's Barbie, Arineff embodies a subversive glamour that is wholly her own, by Laura Regensdorf. Opening photograph by Quill Lemons. Ari wears a catsuit by Alaya, and an earring worn on the catsuit by Agnes, styled by Siobhan Kennedy. The pantheon of It Girls isn't driven by the mere spectacle of dressing up. They simply do because they must, Arineff says, on a crisp Sunday in Lower Manhattan. Whether it's Edie or Parker or Chloe, meaning Sedgwick, Posey, and Sevigny, or Diane Brill or RuPaul, eternal icons all. Still, word on the street is that many actors cling to a very set image. They don't want to wear wigs, take risk with makeup. I don't relate to that. Character play confers a certain freedom. I can get naked behind that, adds Neff. 8 years after her runway debut helped ink a headline-making IMG contract, the Spring 2023 collections saw the actor back on the circuit, this time with an unmissable copper bob. She served retro kink at Batsheva, PVC dress, aqua cat eye, outre glamour at Jason Wu, grungy hair, curve-hugging gown, courtier punk at Maddie Boven, corset, jagged black wig. It's this comfort in the chameleon, Neff says, of the season's guises, beginning with Colleen Estrada's Look One plaid pants and Got Milkweed slip dress. It's a nod to the runway location, a Brooklyn butterfly preserve, where the plant is an essential food source for monarch caterpillars. I wanted her to open the show because I felt like the actress in her could really embrace the butterfly energy that we were going for, says Colleen Estrada creative director Hilary Tamor. And she really just set a tone in such a beautiful, striking way. Lepidopteran metaphors are familiar to Neff. I wanted to put some distance between me and the chrysalis, she told Vogue last year, looking back on a period of cycling through friend groups, hair colors, and pronouns, part of settling into life as a trans woman. But the Neff of today has arrived. There's the personal arc. In GQ, Neff wrote about getting turned away from a queer party in Berlin because the door girl mistook her for a cisgender woman. What a shame, I thought, and what a joy. And in career terms, a busy slate of projects, including the climate-centered Extrapolations on Apple TV Plus and HBO's The Idol, builds to this July's neon-bright Barbie, set to catapult her into the big-budget firmament. Just being a piece of it felt like some kind of preposterous manifestation, Neff says. The world of Barbie is a playground of femininity, and it's a playground of artifice. In other words, a warped combination for a doll that projects unreachable perfection. You could own her and therefore have everything that she had, the 30-year-old says, but you could never really be her. For Neff, childhood Barbies acted as avatars, a pocket-size invitation to experiment with style. How does that manifest on the silver screen? It's not a question of what is my Barbie look. It's a question of which one, she teases, careful not to spoil a surprise. It's more costumes than I've ever worn in any one thing. Dress up at the grandest scale. In the audition for Barbie, there was a note that said, everything in this scene is real to this person. It's not this airheaded thing. It's not ditzy. It's not bitchy. It's not any of that. It's real. Next photo, Arineff in a series of looks from the Spring 2023 runways. Colleen Estrada, Batsheva, Maddie Boven, Jason Wu, and J.W. Anderson. Barbie's makeup might be stamped on by Mattel, but mutable beauty cues have accompanied Neff on stage in two recent off-Broadway plays. Last fall, in Dennis Johnson's Des Moines, She played a loose cannon trans woman who gives Father Michael, Michael Shannon, a yearned-for face painting. There's an intimacy to makeup, not just because of contact, but because of this intention to bring interior to the exterior, she says, of that tender transformation. This spring, she took on the role of Chicly Morose Sasha in the Seagull Woodstock, New York, Chekhov, by way of Thomas Bradshaw. As Neff tweeted, my year of playing extremely unhappy women. The slyly refined beauty statement seen here. Grayscale eyeshadow with glowing sweeps of canary yellow blush. Instead, reflects what makeup artist Marcello Gutierrez sees as Neff's duality, lightness alongside a tough, seductive energy. This Alaya bodysuit, a marvel of subtle sculpting with a cheekily placed jewel, has a similar edge. I don't look like this, but I do now, the actor cooed on set, where the prep began with freshly bleached brows set in place with a glue stick. Drag secret, Neff explained from the makeup chair, a nod to the many lessons she has absorbed from club kid maximalism to Kabuki's work on Sex and the City. Gutierrez took inspiration from Ingres Odalesque Ingresal, an unfinished version of the painter's 1814 masterwork, finding the palette to be a foil to today's hypercolor excess. After all, by forever changing her look, Neff is herself a work in progress. Why not? There's something to be said for keeping yourself on your toes. staying power. La Bouche Rouge, known for its keepsake leather-clad lipsticks, brings a sustainability mindset to perfume. By Laura Regensdorf. Pictured here, the product, and the aluminum refill tube for the new fragrance collection. The idea is to create not just beauty, but the beauty of the 21st century, says Nicolas Guerlier, the charismatic Frenchman behind La Bouche Rouge. The Maison de Haute Beauté debuted its first lipsticks in 2017, pairing considered formulas with hand-stitched leather cases. Instant heirlooms in pale blue and camel and namesake red by way of a heritage tannery. The line's Waste Not ethos is rooted in desire. To covet is to cherish, is to refill. So it's apt that the newest project is fragrance, a category that rides on romance. But for these 5 cents, the beating heart is a palette of upcycled ingredients, comprising nearly a third of each formula. Cedar sawdust, for instance, is steam distilled to create essential oil. Byproduct rose water, when cold processed, yields an extract called rose damascena furade. Guerlier muses that the perfume's color names, like ombre, mystical leaning with rose and saffron, and rouge, a ginger patchouli blend for big personalities, wouldn't pass muster with marketing types. Not strong enough. You have to bring more emotion. I don't care, he says, prizing the essential. The leather cases match. Sustainability is our future, and the new generations are focused on that, he adds, showing me his 12-year-old's drawing of Jakarta reimagined as a forest city, with rooftop gardens and public transit above the rising seas. I'm optimistic for this reason. Keziah Weir writes on books. Lynn's Flair, Lush Coffee Table Books, invite the reader to revel in the details. Atelier of Europe. Writer John Whalen and photographer Oscar Proctor capture the magic of 28 European ateliers. Replica statuary crowd, a Rome workshop. Pictured here, a Paris studio specializes in decorative paint and glimmers in gold. Published by Prestel. Chronorama. This sumptuous volume couples with a Palazzo Grassi exhibition of 20th century art from the Condé Nast archive, including photographs by Diane Arbus, Helmut Newton, and as pictured here, an illustration of a model by George Wolf Planck from a 1917 edition of Vanity Fair, published by Abrams. Richard Avedon, Relationships, a display of more than 100 of the late seminal photographer's works in fashion, as in this 1970 shot of the model Jean Shrimpton in an evening gown, and portraiture from Malcolm X to Linda Evangelista, published by Skira. Onyx, a framed Houston strip club, lends its name to Adrian Raquel's glimmering monograph, which celebrates the performance and artistry of its dancers. Published by Damiani, D.A.P. Six-pack, three love stories, a western, and two more to enjoy. Lone Women, Victor Laval's deft genre bender, opens on Adelaide, a black farmer, setting her home ablaze with the bloodied bodies of her parents inside. She flees California for Montana with a padlocked steamer trunk and secrets to spare. Published by One World. Community Board. Recently dumped Darcy returns home, where she loses and finds herself in a next-door-esque website in Tara Conklin's droll investigation of what we owe our neighbors and ourselves. Published by Mariner. Biography of X. In Catherine Lacey's newest, a widowed writer attempts to understand her late wife, an enigmatic artist, through a series of interviews. The resulting biography is prismatic and brilliant, published by Ferrar, Strauss, and Giroux. Calling Ukraine. In this biting comedy, Johannes Lichtman offers a glimpse of Ukraine, pre-2020 Russian invasion, through the blinkered eyes of a young American working abroad. Published by Mary Sue Rucci Books. The Great Reclamation. In Singapore, a fraught, decades-long love story unfurls against the upheaval of Japan's invasion and the country's renewal in this precisely and elegantly rendered epic from Rachel Hing, published by Riverhead. Romantic comedy. Curtis Sittenfeld presents a romantic formula flip. Woman comedy writer, pop star, man, and investigates gender expectations and dynamics amid the humor. Published by Random House. Splash! Mermaids are having a moment in the cultural slipstream. Forget what you know about mermaids, commands Ren Yu, the teen narrator of Jade Song's blood-soaked Chlorine, published by William Morrow, calling to mind and dismissing red-haired Ariel and pre-Raphaelite beauties. The directive is a fitting tagline for a crop of new novels with resonances that lean more Homeric than Disney and narratives geared toward a plugged-in audience. Halle Bailey, star of the forthcoming live-action The Little Mermaid, has said the film, too, will be updated with the current times. Chlorine sees a high school swimmer go to drastic lengths to assume what she believes is her true form. In Cassandra Kaw's taut, bewitching, The Salt Grows Heavy. Tor Nightfire, a mermaid, is betrayed by her husband. Their daughters devour his body and destroy his kingdom. And in Julia Langbein's American Mermaid, published by Doubleday, when a Hollywood studio adapts and drains the salty life force from a novel about a wheelchair-bound mermaid, fiction collides with real life. The creatures have traded languid hair combing for power brokering on their own terms. It's a welcome title shift. This program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.